Okay, here we are. We're live again, 2/8/2024, 1 o'clock, 1300 for the military people. If you're not military, it's one. Anyway, there's an article that came out that was talking about the basically nation state Chinese being in our critical infrastructure systems for 5 years. And immediately, the question should be something along the lines of, like, well, how the hell can a nation state stay inside of our critical infrastructure systems for 5 years? Well, that's pretty simple to answer. I saw that article. I'll read a little bit of it here in a second. But I saw that article and I was like, let's just see how difficult it is to find vulnerable critical infrastructure stuff. And I actually ran a timer on my phone as I started looking around. And all I did was the same stuff I've been doing for, I think, 3+ years now on this podcast or live stream, wherever the hell this is, through Shodan. And it just took me, I recorded it, took me 3 minutes and 37 seconds. So, critical infrastructure, typically you would consider water control systems to be critical infrastructure, especially if you can get or see something that is along the lines of, the chemical systems that treat the water, right? Like, you don't want to be drinking straight chlorine. It's not good for you. So I just basically poked around looking for systems that have water that are tied to misconfigured or strange port numbers. And I found about 5,000 of them in the US, 55,077 to be exact. The largest ones are in Ashburn, Virginia here. But then there's a really weird port number that shows up, which I won't say the port number here because I'm not trying to get people to do this stuff because you don't want to do what I do and it's potentially troublesome. But you can find this really weird port number. And when you look at that really weird port number, you start seeing responses that tell you, like, water entry, water treatment, water temp, water volume, height in tank, regular, treated, et cetera, et cetera. So those keywords also show up and you can see the tank volumes. The other thing is this weird port number happens to be tied to, and it just took me a Google search. So again, not crazy difficult, not something that requires you to have super amazing technology skills. But you look for this weird port number and it actually comes back and tells you that this is typically tied to a thing called Chemtrol, Chemtrol. And it literally says in their documentation, which is public, it's a PDF, the port number must be set to this port. And then it tells you what this thing does. And basically, that's it. Like I said, under 4 minutes, able to go off and find vulnerable water treatment systems, 5,100 of them roughly. Does that mean all 5,100 are pwnable? No. But does it mean of the ones that I saw with the strange port number that were literally responding to a very simple query and giving back chemical information as well as tank volumes, possibly pwnable? Yeah. Is that a problem? Absolutely. Does this help us understand a bit more about how likely the problem is here? You know what I mean? It just is. Let me read a little bit of what this article says. So, this is in Reuters, whatever. Chinese campaign curriculum goes by 5 years, US says. It's by Rafael Satter. An advanced group of Chinese hackers taking aim at U.S. critical infrastructure has been active for as long as half a decade. So that's not good. Volt Typhoon. If you haven't heard of Volt Typhoon, you know they're been known to be around for quite a while. They are PRC affiliated. Even looking at the publication here from CISA, CISA, NSA, and FBI partners releasing a critical infrastructure advisory. It goes into the different agency things that have shown up here tied to this particular group of baddies. Volt Typhoon has compromised the IT environments of multiple critical water, or excuse me, critical infrastructure organizations, primarily communications, energy, transportation systems, water, and wastewater sectors. And I'll put all this stuff in the stuff here when this is finished. But this is also in Canada. It's comically easy to find this stuff and then to do things to it that you wouldn't want to have happen. I don't know about y'all, but I don't want my kids drinking chlorine at a level that's going to basically burn their insides out. Theoretically, probably more than theoretically, realistically. if you really took the time, you could do something like that. So aren't those critical infrastructures supposed to be super regulated, and don't they all have to be compliant and stuff? Yeah. Let's just table that, because that's a problem. I also wanted to talk about the Biden administration has nominated a lady named Elizabeth Kelly to lead the, what are they calling this thing? The AI Safety Institute at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST. Elizabeth Kelly is her name. In the announcement, Lael Brainard, Director of White House National Economic Council, said that Kelly had shaped the president's agenda on tech and financial regulation and worked to build broad coalitions of stakeholders. The new institute will play a critical role in fostering the development of the technology by July. It's set to create a red team testing standards for major AI developers to ensure the systems are safe, for consumers and businesses. The administration considers the safety test as necessary to unlock the benefits of rapidly moving technology, creating a level of trust that would allow for wider adoption of AI. The federal government recently began requiring AI companies to test their systems, but so far those tests have a lack of universal standards that the Institute plans to finalize this summer. So just to, you know, go a little bit further down the rabbit hole on this one, I did a little bit of looking at this Elizabeth Kelly person. This is not to single her out, because I don't know her from Adam, but just this is part of the problem with the way that DC works, right? So Elizabeth Kelly, current Biden White House, looks like a super smart lady, graduate of Yale Law School. Obviously, she's really, really smart and brilliant at what she does, but her skill set is what kind of concerns me. Seasoned executive, trusted partner to CEOs, driving policy change, policy, spearheaded acquisitions, VP of growth, Capital One Investing, United Income, law clerk. Don't see anything in here about a real background or education in computer science, machine learning, mathematics, artificial intelligence, cloud, security, any of that stuff. Now, she did help draft up some stuff on the executive order for AI, but any lawyer I could go find on the street could pretty much help draft up that type of stuff. Hell, I could have ChatGPT do it. Again, I think this lady's great. Congratulations to her. I think she can do some amazing things. We need more people like her doing badass work. However, let's just be real about this. And if you are not a person that has a background in AI or mathematics or computer science or machine learning or security or any of those things, do you really think that you should be running the fucking organization that's going to regulate how AI is being developed? Do we want, I mean, if everyone is as doomsday as they talk about in this space, do we want someone that doesn't know how physics works running the Nuclear Regulatory Agency? Does that sound like a good idea? You know, I mean, just my thoughts. Maybe I'm way off. Maybe we should just be nominating people right and left to do whatever the hell they think they want to do. But seems to me like it would be smart to, and yeah, they got some other people there and obviously, but this is the person in charge that has no background, no technical education, no professional background in actual AI and those types of things. And they're running the agency that is going to regulate artificial intelligence. What is today's date? The 8th? I'm putting this down in my little history book of things. I'm going to say that this is not a good idea. Okay. So let's just table that. I mean, shit, man. Some of the stuff just is giggle-worthy. Article in The Independent, millions of hacked toothbrushes used in Swiss cyber attack. On your list of what the hell type of things, here you go. Hackers have infected millions of smart toothbrushes. I didn't even know there was a smart toothbrush. Okay. In order to carry out a massive cyber attack against a Swiss company, according to reports, the internet-connected toothbrushes were linked together in something known as a botnet for DDoS. The website of a Swiss firm was knocked offline as a result of the attack. The company targeting the attack, which was not named, reported lost millions of euros in business while the site is down. Fortinet warned of the dangers of smart devices like everybody else has, which can include webcams, baby monitors, doorbells, and domestic appliances. Yeah. Some cybersecurity researchers have questioned the report, doubting that such a large number of toothbrushes could be compromised. Well, I mean, how are you questioning it when this company went down? I mean, I guess you could go look in the logs and do some forensics or whatever, but I mean, it's happened before. Remember Mirai? We had Mirai come around, and that was like fridges and traffic lights and printers and whatever else that generated DDoS. Why couldn't a web-enabled toothbrush? And why do you need a web-enabled toothbrush? Of all the, like, just brush your fucking teeth. Dude, I mean, are we that dumb that you need a toothbrush to tell you how to brush your teeth? Is there anything that we're not going to connect to the internet? Like, what's web-enabled underwear? Like smart drawers? I don't know, man. I brush my teeth twice a day, and it's a toothbrush, and it's not going to get connected to a DDoS. Yeah. Okay, so this one was kind of interesting. Hack read: employee duped by AI-generated CFO and $25.6 million deepfake scam. Now, number one, if you're working for a company and they can move $25 million over just wires back and forth, there's a problem there. So that's one thing. You know, let's be kind of real about that. But let's just read a little bit more here, because the things get crazy. So a multinational company's Hong Kong branch faced a substantial financial setback due to a deepfake scam. During a video call, an employee was deceived by digitally manipulated versions of the company's CFO and others, resulting in unauthorized transfer of funds to the scammers. The scam recalls the August 2022 incident when scammers did a deepfake of Patrick Hillman, Binance's chief communications officer. The hologram was manipulated to deceive users into participating in online meetings and target crypto stuff. Reports indicate that the employee in this case was tricked out of paying 200 million Hong Kong dollars. I don't know, what are Hong Kong dollars called? Anyway, after participating in a deepfake video call impersonating the company's CFO, the worker was persuaded after seeing multiple staff members attending that call. However, all were deepfake creations. All were deepfake creations. The worker initially became suspicious after receiving a message from the UK-based CFO saying, "What the fuck are you doing?" and avoided it, believing it was a phishing email. So this is great, because like Jesus Christ, this is awesome. So this person bought a deepfake and had multiple people on a Zoom call or something that was all deepfake, and they moved around $25 million, but they didn't click on the link from their actual CFO to tell them to not do what they were doing. Oh, sometimes life is just too good. What happened is the scammers used publicly available footage to create convincing versions of the meeting's participants, according to the Hong Kong police senior superintendent, blah, 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 blah. In the digitally altered video, the CFO issued fraudulent instructions to transfer funds to unauthorized accounts. The employee, a finance worker at the company, followed those instructions, leading to a significant financial loss because the scammers had immaculately replicated the CFO's appearance and voice. The worker transferred $25 million to 5 bank accounts in 15 different transactions. Not only did it once, they did it 15 times. The scam was discovered after the employee shared the information with the company's head office. It is worth noting that the incident lasted a week. So this went on for a week. This person did this 15 times. They transferred $25 million to 5 different bank accounts. And then at the end of it, they were like, you know, I wonder if that was legit. Oh, man. However, this isn't the first of its kind involving deepfake technology. Fraudsters have been relying on this technology to cheat people out of money. Yep. Hate to be the guy that said I told you so, but I did. So there's that one. It's real. It's legit. Be ready. Prepare your staff. Don't let somebody transfer $25 million. And if you're transferring money and you feel any bit of weird about it, at least ask a question. But I do love that this one was, they bought the deepfake and they didn't buy the actual email from their CFO saying like, why is money leaving our accounts? Awesome. Forbes is also talking about the issue about how CISOs are scapegoated. Clorox scapegoat cyber chief rewards board after crisis. That doesn't shock me. Clorox's 2023 investor meeting exemplifies and reaffirms why corporate cyber governance too often remains primarily a rhetorical charade. Just a few months after a devastating summertime cyber attack that upended production, dented revenues by nearly $500 million and cut valuation by $3 billion, Clorox opted to further entrench itself and power and enrich its board and its C-suite. The consumer products giant rewarded CEO Linda Randall with the self-supervising dual title of board chair. Matthew Shattock, the chair during the recent crisis, was retained and simply redesignated as the board's lead independent director. The other 10 board directors ran unopposed and were summarily reappointed. The company also, and during the same week, the company also circulated a vague memo announcing that their CISO, Amy Bogak, was leaving the company. So everybody on the board, including the CEO and those folks who were there during this pretty egregious breach, stay where they're at, get promoted, win cool stuff. The CISO basically gets a thank you, see you later, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you thing. Proxy statements of grossly underutilized information well can reveal or conceal much about strategy, corporate, blah, blah, blah. Clorox massive cyber crisis in its 2023 proxy filing is filled with several concerning lax business as usual governance red flags, including the opening statement from the outgoing chair Shattuck and CEO Randall make zero mention of cybersecurity. Clearly, though, the large-scale August cyber breach occurred after the 2023 June fiscal year end. It easily qualifies as material financial reporting. Don't you have to do that, like, legally? Yeah. Curiously, tucked 35 pages deep in the proxy is the following boilerplate disclosure. The board has provided oversight with respect to management's investigation of in response to the cyber attack disclosed by the company on August 14, 2023, including but not limited to public disclosures, the operational financial impact, and the company's remediation efforts. Remarkably, such noteworthy bad news was omitted from the top two leaders' letters. The proxy statement recommended re-election of all 12 directors of the board. All were reappointed, even independent of the breach. Clorox post-pandemic struggles are well documented. Shares are down 33%, blah, blah, blah. In a statement on cyber readiness, the proxy indicates that the company's cyber preparedness team is led by our chief information and data officer and our chief information security officer. However, chief information officer and data security officer Chow Banks is not proxy worthy or named as an executive officer in the company. Her exclusion signals a diminished C-suite role. The CISO was likely another layer away from the board, as Bloomberg disclosed that Banks will also assume CISO responsibilities. Cover up E sounds to me. And again, if you're a CISO at a big company, you're the sacrificial lamb. They'll parade you out and crucify you while they go promote themselves and get bigger dollars. So don't be a CISO. Maybe that's the thing. I don't know. Like, if you're bold enough, go be a CISO. But I want to keep my career going, even though it's, you know, my career. Here's a thing, and I won't beat this to death because everybody's sick of hearing me bitch about cyber insurance, but this is from a report that was actually done by the Insurance Information Institute. Just fast facts, right? 10% increase in the average total cost of a breach. We know that. $1.07 million is the cost difference where remote work and third parties was a factor. So if you have remote work or third parties and a breach occurs, you're going to have an increase of about $1 million. And then there's some other stuff in here that says, let's see, ransomware attacks rose by 105% globally. And here we go. So direct written premiums, the premiums that we pay to these insurance companies by the largest U.S. insurers, increased by 92%. Let me say that again. Direct written premiums collected by the largest U.S. insurers increased by 92% year over year. So they're making more money, but how many folks are getting the payouts from this stuff? Good question. Ask the question. I would if I was looking for a policy. Verizon says 63,000 employees' info fell into the wrong hands. It's an insider this time, though, they said. Teleco says it's a private matter. It's not shared externally. Verizon is notifying more than 63,000 people, mostly current employees, that an insider accidentally or otherwise had inappropriate access to their personal data. The privacy blunder, see, there's a little bit of a a wording thing that goes on there with the PR folks is they say privacy because privacy gives it a different spin in the market than a security thing. Happened in September in the American telco giant attributed to inadvertent disclosure and insider wrongdoing in documents submitted to the Maine Attorney General. The state's strict data loss rules require every security snafu to be disclosed, even though in this case, only 82 of the residents were directly affected. And you can actually get to the filed document here. At the heart of the drama, a Verizon employee apparently obtained a file that they shouldn't have had access to. So bad access management contained personal information, including names, addresses, social security numbers, and all the other shit that's already been pwned 600 times over. The vast majority of impacted people are current Verizon employees. Mm-hmm. I guess is Verizon going to offer their own people credit monitoring yet again? Good question. Maybe so. Ransomware payments exceed $1 billion globally in 2023, hitting record high after a 2022 decline, which I don't know if, you know, does that mean we're doing good things or bad things, or sounds like it's going the wrong direction, if you ask me. Total value received by ransomware attackers. Let's see, 2019, when it kind of became a thing, $220 million, 2020, $905 million, 2021, $983, 2022 drops to $567. Wonder why that is. And then back to 2023, goes up to $1.1 billion. So, law enforcement taking on ransomware, Hive intervention brings them down, but they're not gone. Top ransomware strains. Biggest one, you know, and so I'll throw this link in here, but read it up. It's not looking good for the home team. Ransomware as a service basically is where things really start taking off, and it gets even nastier from there. Klopp is in here. Klopp is making money hand over fist, you know, so Klopp's share of all ransomware revenue is pretty significant. Britain and France, the assembled diplomats for international agreement on spyware, because we all know that international agreements work out so well. The United Kingdom and France are to jointly host a diplomatic conference at Lancaster House in London this week to launch a new international agreement addressing the proliferation of commercial cyber intrusion tools. According to the Foreign Office, 35 nations will be represented at the conference alongside big tech, legal experts, human rights defenders, blah, blah, blah. A list of the intrusion tools that has not been yet made public, although multinational companies, including Apple, BAE, Google, Microsoft, are confirmed to be among the attendees, so they can go in there and lobby not to have their stuff declared as spyware. The conference will be opened by the Deputy Prime Minister signing the declaration at the conference. States and other attendees will commit to taking joint action on the issue, including meeting again in Paris in 2025. And here's what's really good is it literally says right here, it is not clear what the joint action actually entails. So they're going to get together and sign something, and that's going to solve problems, even though they don't have anything to actually say that they're going to sign. Announcement, and this is in the U.S. Department of State publication. And again, you guys can find this stuff. You go look at it. This is a press statement from Anthony J. Blinken, the Secretary of State. Announcement of a visa restriction policy to promote accountability for the misuse of commercial spyware. So this kind of ties on what I was just saying a second ago. The State Department is implementing a new policy today that will allow the imposition of visa restrictions on individuals involved in the misuse of commercial spyware. The new policy is the most recent action in the United States' comprehensive approach to countering the misuse of commercial spyware. Previous actions have included the issuance of an executive order prohibiting the U.S. government's use of commercial spyware that poses risk to U.S. national security and foreign policy interest. The United States remains concerned with the growing misuse of commercial spyware. The visa restriction is pursuant to Section 212A3C of the Immigration and National Act and allows the Department of State to implement visa restrictions for individuals believed to have been involved in the misuse of commercial spyware to target, arbitrarily or unlawfully surveil, harass, suppress, or intimidate individuals, including journalists, activists, other persons perceived to be distant of their work. And on and on and on. So, I mean, I guess if you're doing spyware things, then you should be worried that you won't get a visa if you happen to get caught. So, okay. I mean, action is better than no action, but is this going to make a difference? I don't really see how that would make much difference. That's just my two cents. I don't know. Today's feeling like an especially cynical day, and I don't know. It's coming off that way, so maybe I apologize. I don't, but anyway. So last thing here, we all hear about the lack of human capital and how hard it is to get people in the space. I actually went to an event on Tuesday night at Cyber Now Labs in Sterling, Virginia, where they've basically put together a cyber trade school. And I met people there that were ex Marine Corps infantry folks. I met folks that were working in restaurants. I met people that were equipment operators. I met a dude who was a landscaper. And all of them were going to this program so that they could get into cyber. Now, they're not going to come out of there and be, you know, L1 Jedis, but they're going to come out of there and go get a job in a SOC. And part of that program was they got a certification. I think it was Security Plus. And then they basically put them into a virtual SOC for, I want to say, 12 or 16 weeks. And they did their time in a SOC so that when they came out, they knew how to do identification, triage, ticketing, et cetera, et cetera. And then they could go into the workforce. At this event on Tuesday, there were recruiters there from a variety of companies that were literally signing people up for work on the spot. And when they show these folks like, hey, starting pay is like $85,000 a year and up, they were all over it. There was folks there from Cameroon, Africa. I met some folks from Nigeria. I met some people from other nations that were all here, and it's great. Like, this is the way that we start to solve the problem. There's a lot of folks that are going to college for cyber, and that's a super expensive 4-year type of thing. This was 20 weeks totaled up, I believe. And then when you come out of it, you got a job, and maybe you never go back to school, but you can continue to get better and grow and get more certs and all those things. So I think, my personal opinion, I think Cyber Now Labs is doing some really cool stuff. If you're in the Virginia area and you want to work in cyber, or you're one of these young folks, new people that's like, how do I get into cyber? Go look them up. It was not exceptionally expensive at all. Like, honestly, I was pretty shocked at the pricing that they were putting out to get somebody through the program and off. And I'm not sure if there's, this is not an endorsement, this is just me saying what I saw. I'm not sure if there's these other programs in other states that are doing this, but it's a really good way to staff up, especially for kind of your junior analyst roles. And we all know that those jobs don't require you to have 20 years of experience and whatever else. And part of what they were also offering was they would help you polish your resume and your LinkedIn profile to help you get the job so that you could get through the shenanigans of the recruiters that say, we need a 5-year, you know, COBOL program or blah, blah, blah to work in a SOC. So Cyber Now Labs in Sterling, Virginia, doing something that I think is going to contribute pretty exponentially to solving the human capital problem that we have. And honestly, I think we should have more of those programs. It's like trade school for cyber. I grew up in a ranching community. We had lots of folks that went to welding school. I was going to go to welding school because it was super cool and I like welding. And you went through the program, and I think it was like 3 months, you came out of there and you got a job because you were a welder. You weren't a Jedi, but you were a welder and you got a job, and you didn't have $35,000, $100,000 in debt from a college. So this is a way that we can start to staff stuff up. Anyway, it's been about 30 minutes. You got other stuff to do. There's your information. Critical infrastructure's in a bad place. It's not going to get fixed anytime soon. We've got issues going on with the way we're managing stuff and putting people in charge that kind of, we might should at least rethink whether or not they should be running stuff. Anyway, as always, if I can help with something, please reach out to me. And above all, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I'll catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed.
This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.